missing episode 8 of The Good, The Bad, and The Wretched. My name is Josh, and I am here with Chris, and we are from the Video Graveyard. How are you, Chris?
Dude, what's up with you?
I am a robot.
You look pretty low budget for a robot.
I know, but I'm having a beer, so pretty soon I am going to be a robot gone wild.
Oh, and you're going to be well-lubed. You're going to be lifting your top up and showing all your robot thingamajiggies to everybody.
Okay. No, I'm not. Well, anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to episode 8 of The Good, The Bad, and The Wretched.
That was kind of odd.
Was it stupid?
No, but you're a robot.
Should I restart?
No.
Okay, we're going to go anyways. Oh, now I'm embarrassed. All right. So here we are with episode 8 of The Good, The Bad, and The Wretched. My name is Josh, and with me as always is Chris.
Hey.
And if you haven't gathered by now from that awkward opening, this week's topic is Robots Gone Wild.
It was less it wasn't awkward. It was just I wasn't expecting it.
Well, I know. Now you know how I felt on episode 3 there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to be talking about robots. And Chris, you had some very specific requests here on the topic.
Yeah, I'm being very... I am of the belief that we should not count computers into this mix. So that would be, for me, not including War Games, 2001, Electric Dreams, Evil Speak. Any movie where it's a computer controlling all the evil... Or the non-evil, because this isn't all just about horror movies that we're going to talk about today.
Right.
It has to be an actual robot, cyborg, something tangible and physical. That's the guidelines I set forth for myself when I made this list.
Okay, well, I was unaware of these guidelines, but I think I stuck within the same guidelines.
Yeah, because a computer and a robot are two entirely different things to me.
Yeah, there's a few areas where it might overlap, but I'm sure you'll correct me.
Yeah, I will. I'll call you out.
All right,
because.
That's cool. What we do. All right. So before we get into the topic, as usual, we're going to go through some things that we've been up to for the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the main thing I did is I went to see Motley Crue on their final tour.
Hopefully final tour.
Well, I think it is going to be their final tour.
Okay. As long as they don't pull a The Who and do like 4 final tours.
Well, they've been pretty adamant that they don't want to be like that.
Well, I don't think Mick Mars really could do another tour after this one.
Well, I heard that Mick Mars's ailment is not as bad as it was.
Really? That's good.
Yeah. So I think they were saying that for a while, and I think he was in pretty bad shape. But, you know, seeing them live, he seemed to be getting around pretty good. And I've heard that he's come out publicly and said that it's not as bad as it was.
That's good, because I remember when we saw them a couple, 3-4 years ago, he was kind of rough.
Yeah, he was. And he's still not awesome, but he was definitely going across the stage. He looked a lot better than he did in the
past. That's good. That's definitely good.
Yeah. And they were really good. I mean, you know, I've seen them. I think this is the 5th time I've seen them in my life. I've seen them a lot of times. Back to, I think Theater of Pain was the first tour I saw them.
Theater
on.
Of Pain?
Yeah.
So the like, kind of the bad album?
The bad album, but they were, the main thing I remember from that tour is Nikki Sixx doing, like, a bass solo or something, and, like, doing tumbles down the stage with a full bottle of Jack and then drinking the entire bottle.
This sounds accurate considering what I've read in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. But this time around, I mean, it was a big show. I mean, it was pretty nostalgic for me because I was watching the show and, you know, it was really dawning on me that this could be the last show I ever see like this.
Stripper poles?
Well, just of that scale. I mean, this was a huge rock show, explosions, lights. I mean it was loud, and I don't know of any bands that can pull it off like these guys anymore. Like, all the kind of big bands that could draw like Motley Crue can are gone.
That's true.
They've whisked out like Aerosmith.
Well, I was talking to my girlfriend actually about this the other day when we were kind of talking about, you know, there's no legends anymore. Mm-mm. There's going to be nobody from this wave of artists who are going to be considered legendary in the future. Like, really, who is there? Nickelback? Come on. Like,
yeah, I know, right?
There's nobody. I mean, it's all these acts from the 60s, 70s, 80s now that are, they're the legends, and they're getting to the point where they're getting too old to tour.
Yeah.
And there's going to be nobody left. There's nobody left.
And no one can put on these big shows anymore. No. Like, they just can't pull it off. Like, they're just, that age of excess is gone. Like, everyone's doing more of a stripped down thing now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine, but you know, you kind of want that. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, like for the younger generation now, like, you know, kids that are in their, you know, that are not 10 yet, for example, when they go to see their first rock show, they'll never see a show like this. Yeah, it's just very
gonna,
possible.
It's just going to be a guy in a friggin' sweater wearing horn rimmed glasses strumming an acoustic. That's what it's going to be. That's your rock shows of the future right
it's
there.
It's true, and it's sad. You know, I mean, I saw Nick Cave last year, and he put on a hell of a show, but it wasn't a show like a Motley Crue show.
Well, no.
And especially a Motley Crue show with Alice Cooper opening.
Well, yeah, and but you said it was the same set list when we saw him a couple years ago.
It's true, it was. But, I mean, if we hadn't seen him, this would have been like a blow your head off show. Mm. I mean, you have Alice Cooper doing a full set and then Crue doing a full, like, yeah, that's crazy pyro
set. That's pretty
set.
Awesome because, you know, I prefer Alice Cooper to Motley Crue, to be honest with you, but good combo. Can't
it
go
was
wrong.
A great combo. And Crue, you know, they did well. I mean, they covered their entire catalog. I mean, they did play Smoking in the Boys Room. Ugh. But, you know, but they also played, like, On With the Show and Too Fast for Love. And
Did they play Save Our Souls?
No. I mean, the two main ones that I wasn't expecting were the two I just said from Too Fast for Love, which is my favorite Crue album.
Public Enemy number one?
No. Those were the only... Oh, they played Livewire.
Oh, okay.
But, and then Tommy Lee had his usual, you know, big... extreme drum set thing going over the entire crowd on this like roller coaster track spinning around, and it was pretty impressive, of course. And they really ended quite cool too. They actually ended the show on a separate stage at the back of the arena, and they did Home Sweet Home back there, and I thought that was really cool. But they all seemed really into it, and it was really nice to see, and I think it's a good way for them to go.
How did Vince sound though?
You know, Vince is Vince, and but I thought he sounded pretty good. He was still hitting some high notes. I mean, obviously he's not what he once was.
Well, no, I mean,
but I wasn't embarrassed for him.
He really wasn't a great singer.
No,
in
but
the
I
beginning
mean,
either. So,
but he's charismatic, and he still is. And I, you know, frankly, I thought Nikki Sixx kind of stole the show a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what it was about him. Maybe it was because he had this giant flamethrower on his bass
at
one point.
For me. The Crue was always Nikki Sixx anyway.
Of course. I mean, he did most of the writing.
He was always the front man, really, if you think about it, because he was the guy who was always out there pushing the band and writing all the songs, and he was the one who did most of the interviews and all that. And I mean, and then because he's done Heroin Diaries and all that stuff, all those books now, it's like he's just like kind of like the spokesman of the Crue.
Yeah, for sure. But it was good to see them, and you know, I will definitely miss seeing them. But I really do feel it's their last hurrah. I mean, they've made such a big deal of it. They've said they'll play again. They may play again, like if they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something like that, but they won't tour again.
Okay.
So it is a distinction that maybe will be bent a little in the future.
So now Tommy Lee can go back to doing some terrible rock rap and Methods of Mayhem.
I know. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see what these guys get up to, you know, because none of them have really done well.
Well,
solo.
He's got Nikki Sixx has got 6 AM and they're fairly popular.
Yeah, I haven't heard them. Are they good?
Not my bag.
Yeah,
they're not as sleazy as the Crue.
Yeah, and this show had the sleaze factor, which I enjoyed. And
well, of course you did.
Yeah, of course I did.
Because you're a sleaze.
Anyway, so let's get down to some movies. So I've been watching a lot of recent movies, actually, so I'll just talk a bit about a couple of those. I've got one older one if we have time, but so the first one I saw is Big Hero 6.
Yep.
Which now I'm not really a fan of animation. I don't really like it, frankly, at all. There's the odd exception. I thought How to Train Your Dragon was pretty good, but for the most part I'm not a big fan. But I really dug this one. I thought it was kind of a cool mix between Disney and Marvel, which is exactly what it was. I didn't know that Big Hero 6 was actually a short comic series a number of years ago.
Yeah, it was a Marvel series, actually.
Yeah, so I didn't know that before, but I thought it was really good. I mean, it was beautiful to look at. They made San Francisco into San Francisco or something, and so it was a hybrid between Japan and America. And the backgrounds and the animation was stunning. And I thought the story was pretty fun. I wasn't expecting to like it, and I actually came out liking it more than I've liked a lot of animation recently.
Plus, it's got T.J. Miller's the kind of stonery type friend. So.
Oh, yeah. T.J. Miller.
T.J. Miller.
Yep. He's we can always, you can always recognize his voice now.
Yep.
And he's in so much animation, too. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, two of the ones I like the most. So, there you go.
There you go.
But anyway, I'd recommend it. yeah, even if you're not really a fan of animation, it's definitely one of the better ones that I've seen. I also saw Interstellar. Have you seen that one?
No.
No?
I don't know. I've just... Same thing that happened with me with Inception. I'm just not really that interested for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know what got me into it. I discovered that you could see it on IMAX, and that was the way to see it. And I haven't seen a show on IMAX for a long time, so that's how I watched it. And it was pretty awesome.
I think the last IMAX I saw was Spider-Man 2.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I drove down to Seattle to see Raiders of the Lost Ark on IMAX a couple of years ago, which was okay. But before that, it was like Superman Returns.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
But yeah, it was pretty cool to see on IMAX, and I didn't know that Nolan doesn't he won't allow his movies to be shown in 3D, which is kind of cool. Right. And in IMAX, this movie was pretty stunning. And the storyline, you know, I mean, it had a lot of questionable twists and turns. I thought McConaughey did a good job in the lead role.
What's going on with him?
What do you mean?
Like, when did Matthew McConaughey become an actual actor? Like, seriously, when did this happen?
When he did Dallas Buyers Club.
Dallas Buyers Club and Mud and True Detective.
I know.
I mean, and now Interstellar. When did this happen? I remember him in all these terrible romantic comedies and Texas Chainsaw Massacre the beginning. What's going on with him?
I think Failure to Launch hit a chord.
Maybe. Maybe. But he's just got to stop doing those stupid fucking Lincoln commercials now.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know when that happened. That's weird.
Yeah, he's pretty good. And yeah, this movie's pretty good. And it's Christopher Nolan. So it's got some, you know, odd.
Heavy visual sensing.
Yeah, and it's pretty deep. But yeah, I dug it. I thought it was pretty cool. And great to see on IMAX. Good to see on the big screen.
My favorite Christopher Nolan movie is still Memento.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. But I don't know. I'm not a big Nolan fan, but... But this was pretty cool. I mean, it was definitely a sci-fi movie that's going to be remembered, I think.
Yeah, I might check it out eventually, but I'm not in any rush. Just like, I still haven't seen Gravity because I just don't care.
Yeah, I haven't seen Gravity either.
I don't care. Like, I don't like
Sandra
Bullock. I don't want to see Sandra Bullock floating around in space crying and curling into a ball for 2 hours. And I also take issue with the fact that the guy who directed that, even though he might be a good director, that he won for best director at the Oscars when it was basically just special effects
right,
he directed.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
kind of it, I kind of don't like that idea.
Now, I don't know how I'd feel if Nolan got nominated for this one, though, because it was a lot of special effects, but I mean, it takes a lot to pull that off. Now, I haven't seen Gravity, so I can't really comment too much on it, but it did really feel like one person in front of a green screen the entire time. That's
yeah,
what he was directing.
See, that's the problem.
And this feels like a lot more than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we'll have to see Gravity so we can yap about that one time.
I guess so.
Another one I saw, another new release I saw was Nightcrawler.
What's going on with you and new releases?
Well, I hadn't been in the movies in a while, so I took some opportunities to go and went. People were willing to go, so I don't like going by myself. So, hey, there you go. But yeah, this one was okay. Jake Gyllenhaal, and he's like this kind of like a crime scene paparazzi almost.
Yeah, I wanted to see this because it looks kind of sleazy.
It's pretty sleazy, and he's really creepy the way he talks and the way he acts. Like,
didn't he lose a lot of weight, so he looks all gaunt too?
He does
stuff.
Look really gaunt, and yeah. he talks really, really creepy, weird, like everything's really enunciated, and and yeah, he's a very good manipulator, and yeah, it had a few moments. It had one pretty standout tense scene, and it had some moments. A friend of mine that I went with said it felt like a episode of CSI, but which I can kind of understand as well. I don't know if I'd recommend rushing out to the theater to see this one, but it would be a good watch on video or whatever. After the fact.
Jake Gyllenhaal though.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of stuff I've seen him in that I dug.
He was really good in Prisoners.
I haven't seen that one. Yeah.
Prisoners is a really good movie. I mean, yeah. that's a movie where Hugh Jackman's not playing Wolverine, so...
Actually, or singing.
That would make the movie different if it was just like Hugh Jackman in Wolverine mode trying to save his abducted daughter.
There you go.
He'd be like, give me back my daughter! Slicing people up. That'd be an entirely different movie. Prisoners, Jake Gyllenhaal's great in Prisoners.
Okay, cool.
And I mean, come on, Donnie Darko.
Yeah, don't even.
Oh, we'll talk about Donnie Darko when we do a cult movies episode then, because it doesn't sound like you like it too much from the look you just gave me.
I don't like Donnie Darko.
Okay, well, that's a cult movies one.
I know.
We'll save that for another day.
We'll just go with three episodes in a row where I lose a fan base because I don't like a movie that I'm supposed to like.
Well.
All right, so those are the big theater movies I saw. I also watched on video an older movie from the 60s by Monty Hellman.
As in VHS?
I know, and then I found out that Criterion just put out a really nice Blu-ray of it. Anyway, it's called The Shooting, and it's directed by Monty Hellman, who... he's done a lot of stuff.
Two Lane Blacktop,
Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. So he's kind of been all over the place. But Cockfighter, Iguana. But this is kind of one of the ones he was known for kickstarting his career. Mm-hmm. Roger Corman was an uncredited producer on this. Jack Nicholson and Warren Oates are two of the stars. And it's a psychedelic Western, and well, not really psychedelic, but it's like kind of existential, and I really dug this one. It's a lot of just stark barren landscapes, and it's basically three or four characters throughout, and I can see why this one has the reputation it has, and I'm looking forward to seeing that Criterion Blu-ray, because seeing it on Pan and Scan VHS just didn't do it justice.
It's really weird thinking that he did that movie, and then he did Two Lane Blacktop, and then he goes and does Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did that.
He did, with Bill Moseley as the Santa Claus killer,
exactly,
with this clear dome on his head where he could see his brain.
Yeah.
So weird. But I think Monty Hellman's actually come out and said that that's like Silent Night, Deadly Night 3 is like his favorite movie that he's made. Like,
really?
I think it's the one he said he had the most fun making.
Wow. Well, he did that anthology, Trapped Ashes. He did one of the stories.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't really care for it.
Very unmemorable movie. When Warren Oates has been in tons of Hellman's movies, and Warren Oates is kind of one of those actors that's just really cool.
Was Warren Oates in Race with the Devil?
Yep.
Yeah, Warren Oates is the man.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of cool stuff, and he's one of those. He's in the Wild Bunch, and he's a pretty cool dude. And
he's got that stash going on most of the time too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'd recommend this one for sure. It also had Millie Peters in it, or Millie Perkins, sorry, and she's been in a lot of kind of cult movies that I like, and she's had a really interesting career. Like, she was in The Witch Who Came from the Sea, and she was in one of my favorite 60s movies or 70s movies, Wild in the Streets. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's really cool. It's basically this rock star guy becomes basically president, and he puts everyone that's over 30 in these internment camps and feeds them LSD.
It sounds like Logan's Run.
It's really... he doesn't kill people. He just makes them do drugs. It's pretty hilarious. But it's a great movie. But
sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, but I'd really recommend the Shooting. And this was shot back-to-back with a movie called Ride in the Whirlwind, which Jack Nicholson wrote. And... They usually go together. They sort of go hand in hand, but they're both together on this Criterion disc. So, those are the main ones I've seen recently.
Cool.
How about you, Chris?
How about me? Well, I don't have a lot to talk about because not a lot of time has passed since we recorded last, really. And I've been kind of busy trying to crank out reviews on the website.
Yeah.
As Josh knows.
Yes.
Because he doesn't like it when I get very productive.
No, it's good when you're productive. It's just not good when I'm not productive.
Yeah, that's true. The only two I want to mention is last time we recorded, after we talked about Tom Savini, we watched a movie called Vendetta, which is a 1986 movie. And I'd always been curious about this movie because it's one of those ones that's out on like Lightning Vestrom Video.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and it had that nice hand-painted cover of this blonde, leggy girl holding a machine gun.
Yeah.
Going for revenge. So I was like, I'm all in on this. This is going to be awesome.
It would look like a women in prison movie.
Yeah.
Which it kind of was.
It kind of was, but it was bad. Like,
it was bad.
It was shot horribly. It was a 1986 movie, and I'm watching it, and I'm thinking to myself, was this made with a camcorder? Because it looked very... The movements of the camera were jerky. You had complained a few times about the framing of the shots.
Well, just basic, like, like, I'm not saying every, I, like, I don't, I'm not really a big fan of film school. Like, I've never really believed that people should go to film school, but you need to know the basics of filmmaking and, like, just simple things like, you know, filmmakers out there, like, just crossing the line, like, you just don't do that. Like, basically where you're shooting, you know, characters from one angle and then you basically cross over to the other side. So it's really unnatural feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened constantly in this movie and it really kind of takes you out of it.
And it happened during fight scenes too, which made it even worse.
And the editing was atrocious as well. I mean,
yeah,
it was really a disappointment because Roberta Collins is in this and she was one of my favorite kind of B movie starlets from the 70s. And she is vastly underused as like this prison guard. And
But she wasn't really in it that much.
No, she just popped up here and there and there wasn't really a purpose for her.
And the basic story of it was that it's about this Hollywood stunt woman. I am trying to think of who was the actress, but she was really terrible in it.
Yeah.
And her sister gets put into jail and she ends up...
Right.
She ends up being...
Her sister like kills someone that's trying to date rape her, right?
Yeah. This redneck guy's trying to date rape her. So she gets tossed into the clink and she ends up falling in with the wrong crowd and gets killed. They force feed her drugs and she leaps to her death.
Yeah.
So, the stunt woman, Karen Chase is the name of the actress.
Right.
She gets herself put in the jail to get revenge.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, this is great.
In like a totally ridiculous manner, by the way. She like,
she goes on this like little crime spree where she like steals a car, busts into a jewelry shop and takes the stuff, gets all hammered, drunk driving all over the place, doing all her stunt things. She's getting chased by the cops and she flips the car like a Hollywood stunt person would.
Yeah.
And it pretty much explodes off the edge of this car and it's really stupid. And, It was just a badly done movie. Like, it's like Josh was saying when we were watching, we're like, it's a woman in prison movie, it's a revenge movie, but there's no flow to the movie because it just seems like random scenes thrown together into this one big pot where they took all the cliches and they just said, stirred it up and said, well, we'll see what happens. The only person in it that was actually good was Sandy Martin is her name. She played like kind of the dykey gang leader in there.
Yeah.
She wasn't a dyke though, because she had sex with that guy in the hotel and she was like, thanks, that was great, I'm out, kind of thing.
Yeah, but you know, we're using the word dyke because this was the typical,
it was this 80s movie, we're allowed,
the 80s like typical like manly lesbian type
she
character.
Had the crew cut and the wife beater and everything, she fit the stereotype perfectly.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is
she
is
was
that,
good.
Yeah, she was really good in it.
Yeah.
Considering that it was like a shitty low budget, really bad movie. But I looked her up when we were watching it and I realized she played the grandma in Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh,
so I was laughing about that for a long time because I'm like, man, I love Napoleon Dynamite, and to see her go from this shitty prison movie to that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But she's like a really busy character actress and it was just terrible. So
I've been trying to write this review and the movie, it was like I was in a trance. Like, I don't remember it. It was like this, like, it was like a bad nightmare I couldn't get out of.
Well, it was pretty shitty.
Yeah.
The only other movie I want to mention is I watched Cave Girl.
Right.
Which is a 1985 movie from that illustrious company, Crown International, who really didn't... Like, everyone knows Canon Films. Everyone knows, you know, Empire Pictures and all those companies. But Crown International, I don't think they get enough cred for bringing the drive-in sleaze.
Well, they haven't really done a good job of bringing those movies out
again.
Well,
no. I mean, I watched this movie as part of a Mill Creek 12 movie pack called the Too Cool for School collection.
Yeah.
And it's 12 movies on, I think, 4 double-sided discs. It's like 2 movies per side of a disc. And, you know, they're not authored very well. I mean, most of them are in anamorphic widescreen, surprisingly.
Oh, cool. Okay.
But they're like, you know, kind of compression issues and stuff. And it's all Crown International movies.
Yeah, no, I know, it's a great
set.
So
it's all their 70s and 80s stuff. They're not around anymore. They haven't been around since like probably the early 90s, late 80s. But, you know, it's got My Tutor, My Chauffeur, Tomboy, and things like that. And I've been slowly working my way through.
They were like the kings of the like sex comedy.
Yeah, kind of.
They were really up there. And, you know, the problem with Crown International movies is they haven't really had that special treatment that a lot of other movies have had. I mean, Scorpion's put out a few other movies on Blu-ray, but there's like no extras, like minimal extras. Like they're just not getting that like extra touch that they could be getting. And like something like My Chauffeur, like Deb Foreman's in that. Like you'd think it would be getting.
And Howard Hessman's in
and
My Chauffeur.
Sam Jones in that too?
I think so.
Like you'd think it would be getting actually more
really,
love.
I really like My Chauffeur too.
No, it's a decent flick, but I think that's the problem with why Crown International movies aren't getting out there like they could be. Even Tomboy, I mean, why not get Betsy Russell to do a commentary? Like it would just add to it, right? They just don't seem to be getting the love that
other
movies are.
Well, even if they were to do like double feature Blu-rays of the Crown International stuff with just a couple of extras here and there, kind of like what Scream started doing now by pairing up like Blackula and Blackula, Scream Blackula, Scream, and you know, because they've realized that you know these movies aren't going to sell as a single edition like solo movie, so why not pair them up? And then you're more likely to sell copies. Because if they were to release Blackula and Scream, Blackula, Scream, like separately, I wouldn't buy them.
Yeah.
But I'm buying that double feature no matter what.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you have to look
Blackula's
at it.
Blackula's not a very good movie, but.
I know, but I'll still buy it.
It is Blackula.
It's Blackula, man. He's the soul brother with the blood-sucking craze. But I mean, why wouldn't you want to buy a double feature? You'd be more likely to, right? Because especially now when a lot of people that aren't cinephiles like you and I won't buy physical media now.
No.
They'll watch it on Netflix. They'll download it, whatever, right? I still buy constantly.
Yeah, me too.
And we're going to talk about our constant buying in a second. But I just feel like if they were to double up some of these Crown International movies, it would be great.
Yeah, and it's weird because Scorpion obviously has a line on them. Like, I'm not sure why they're not doing more with this.
Well, it just seems like Mill Creek is the company that has all of the rights.
Yeah.
When they bought up BFI, I think BFI went under.
Okay.
And they bought the rights to all these. So they're just cranking out these 12 movie sets, which, don't get me wrong, I like these 12 movie sets. You can get 12 exploitation culty movies for $5.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're not the greatest picture quality, but they're watchable.
For sure.
And I mean, you get to see all these, like, you get to see The Pink Angels, which is like one of the greatest biker movies ever because it's about gay bikers and it's from the 60s and it's really taboo considering when it came out, right? But it's culty because it's like ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
You know, and you get the Roberta Finley movies like Lurking Evil, Primeval and Lurkers and things like that. And,
right.
You know, Crown Internationals, they're good for us cult guys. Cave Girl isn't.
Let's get back to Cave Girl.
Cave Girl's not good. It's Daniel Roebuck's first movie.
I always thought the chick on the cover was pretty hot, though.
Cindy Ann Thompson's pretty cute.
Yeah.
She wasn't in much.
Really?
Yeah, no.
She's the Cave Girl.
Yeah, but she wasn't in much. She's in the movie, but she wasn't in much in her career. And the problem with that movie is it's like boring. Because it's this nerdy Daniel Roebuck guy. He gets picked on in school all the time. He wears this like Indiana Jones-like fedora. And he gets sent. They go to this mine to where they discover these cave paintings. And the military is doing this missile testing just down the street. And there's this glowing crystal in this cave, conveniently. And when he touches the crystal, the military missiles happen to go off. And this causes a time influx, a time flux that sends him back to medieval times.
Oh, really?
It sends him back 25,000 years in the past to the medieval times. The problem with that is 25,000 years ago, there wasn't any cavemen. But the movie wants you to think there was.
Oh, they need, yeah, okay.
But he meets this cave girl who's this hot blonde chick who she wouldn't look like that if she was a real cave girl. And she wears like a, you know, fur bikini or whatever. So the movie...
I don't think cave girls brush their teeth. Did she have nice teeth?
She had perfect teeth.
Yeah, like what's up with that?
I don't know. Because the other tribe, which was like, you know, the kind of like a bunch of guys and girls, they were all gross and their teeth were messed up and everything. So it was basically
I always thought it wouldn't be very good to make out with a cave girl.
Probably not. She wouldn't know what she's doing.
Probably wouldn't smell very good.
No, probably not.
Be like getting it on with someone that's on Survivor or something.
Probably.
But worse, right?
Well, worse, because they don't know what bar soap is.
That's true.
But... he's there. He's
Could
trying.
She talk?
No, she just like he was teaching her to talk. But this is the best thing about it. Okay.
Okay.
So he's trying to get with this cave girl because he thinks she's cute, and she thinks he's kind of cool because he's from the future and that. And this other tribe is always watching them. He's trying to teach her things like sayings, but they're not the normal sayings. Like if you know someone who doesn't know English and you want to be friendly with them, you'll teach them the basic English. He's trying to teach her stuff like "Can I sit on your face?"
Really?
Do you want to make love now? You know, stuff like that. The other, he's always trying to make, he makes a bed out of these branches to try and like make out with her. Basically, the whole movie is about him trying to lay this cave girl.
Wow.
But the chief on the other tribe is always sneaking around in the, like peeping Tom on him and everything. And he always manages to get himself in a situation where there's slapstick ensues and he's cock blocking this guy all the time through the whole movie. And this makes it sound really good the way I'm describing it.
It does sound
but
really
good.
But
it's not.
Oh.
It's just boring. It's like 80 minutes of boredom. I mean, when I read on the IMDb page that the producer, after he saw the cut, made them go back and film a sequence early in the movie, which is my favorite sequence, where
she gets naked?
No. She does get naked later, but it takes about an hour. But earlier in the movie, he stumbles into the woman's locker room, the girl's locker room at his high school, because someone's taken the women only sign and scratched the W off, so it says men only. So he walks in there and he's like, oh, I'm in the bathroom. And the tennis team comes in and gets all naked and catches him and chases him down. This is notable because there's about 7 pairs of breasts.
Okay.
And one of them is Michelle Bowers.
Michelle Bowers in this?
Yes.
Wow.
In a very brief role as one of the tennis team.
So the tennis team.
So I'm instantly like, okay, Michelle Bauer's in it. That makes this movie better.
That's good.
But yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Okay.
Now, if you want to know more, you can read my review on site. I'm not very kind to it.
Yeah.
The only other thing I want to talk about before we go on to Robots Gone Wild is our... I'm just... I make you feel better by doing it myself.
Appreciate that.
We figured we'd talk about our Black Friday purchases here.
Yeah.
So some of you people out there will hear of a company called Vinegar Syndrome.
We've talked about them because they put out Raw Force.
Yeah, we've talked about them because they put out Raw Force. They put out Graduation Day, which is like an 80s slasher 2 that I recently bought.
Did I pick that up? Why didn't I get that?
I don't know.
Maybe it's because it's too new. There wasn't enough of a discount. Anyway.
Yeah, it was one of those. I don't know. It was $12.49 or something. But I love their name because Vinegar Syndrome is basically, it's a term about how if film is left in a canister, it breaks down if it's not preserved and gives off a vinegary smell.
Oh, I didn't know
that. So their name's pretty cool. I mean, if you research it, it's kind of neat. But these are guys who are rescuing these cult movies that no one really knows about and giving them the treatment that Crown International deserves. Like, they're taking these movies like Hot Saucy Pizza Girls and giving them these like remastered anamorphic, you know, Jungle Blue, which is like this really bizarre. We've talked about Jungle Blue in the past. And so Josh and I were like, we got wind of them having this Black Friday sale, and we were like, okay, let's go in on this and let's do an order. And what did we end up ordering?
We ended up ordering, a whole bunch of titles. We got the Serio Santiago double feature Vampire Hookers with Death Force.
Yep.
And I got the Hot and Saucy Pizza Girls.
Of course you did.
And was Dracula Sucks with Jamie Gillis.
Is that basically a skin flick, or what is that? Is it a triple X?
Yeah, it's Jamie Gillis playing Dracula. He's like kind of one of those legendary.
So is it going to be like penetration?
Penetration?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I would assume so. I don't know. But it is a Dracula movie.
He is not a pervert. He just, it's film history for him.
There was two Dracula movies that, I do like porn parodies, and I haven't seen a lot of them, but especially 70s ones. But
I liked Beetlejuice.
I haven't seen it.
That was a good one.
but there was I know Jamie Gillis starred in two of them. One was called Dracula Exotica, and the other one was called Dracula Sucks. And I don't know which one this was of the two. I don't know if it was the former, the first one or the second one. Anyway, Vinegar Syndrome put it out, and it was like $10, so whatever.
Yeah, and then we both picked up a copy of Doll Squad on Blu-ray, which is a Ted V. Mikkels production. He did Corpse Grinders, which to me is one of the ultimate 70s bad movies about guys digging up bodies and grinding them up and putting them into cat food cans. And it's also paired up with, I think it's called Codename Kill Point.
Mission Kill Point.
Mission Kill Point, which is basically his
90s. Mission Kill Fast.
Mission Kill Fast. It's basically his 90s remake of The Doll Squad by the same director. So that was a pretty cool double feature. I picked up Punk Vacation, which is an 80s punks versus rednecks kind of movie. It's like a revenge flick with a sheriff killing punk rockers.
Yeah.
And it's paired up with a a biker movie from 1984 called Nomad Riders, which is from the same production company and apparently quite similar to Punk Vacation plot-wise.
Yeah, I was a little iffy on that one, yeah. So I thought I'd just borrow yours.
Yeah, you could. And we both picked up Massage Parlor Murders.
Yeah, don't really know anything about it.
But we couldn't resist. It was $10 on Blu-ray. And
it's called Massage Parlor
It's called
Murders.
Massage Parlor Murders, and it's from the 70s, so it's something I'd imagine 42nd Street in New York would lovingly play to all the perverts in their trench coats.
Yeah.
And
you got Christmas Evil.
Yeah, I got Christmas Evil on Blu-ray, which is my ultimate favorite unhinged Santa movie of all time.
Cool.
Brandon Maggart is the star of that, who is Fiona Apple's father.
Ooh.
Yeah, the singer Fiona Apple, yeah. So it's really good. It's a lot more psychological than you think.
Is he the killer Santa?
He is.
Oh, wow.
But you think when you're going into it, like, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night has made that image of killer Santas being like these psychotic guys and all this gore and bloodshed. But Christmas Evil is very psychological.
Okay.
And it's kind of slower paced. And it's about him breaking down, which is why I think it's kind of like... It's getting a lot of respect now because of that.
Right.
But I think at the time people were like, what's this bullshit? I remember watching it when I was a kid on VHS and thinking it was boring as hell.
Didn't Troma put this out as well?
Troma put it out on a really, really terrible DVD.
Okay.
But then Synapse also put it out on DVD.
Wow, it's making the rounds.
So now it's on Blu-ray and all the features from both of those have been carried over.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, it's fully loaded.
Oh, great.
And I'm excited for that because if it's anything like the Raw Force transfer that Vinegar Syndrome did, it's going to look amazing.
Yeah, they do a good job. I mean, like I told you before, I'm not super keen on some of their covers, but mm-hmm. But they are picking some pretty cool, well, obscure titles.
What else did we grab? There's a couple more.
I can't remember, buddy.
Well, let's just say
because we're going to find out when that box comes in the mail.
We bought a lot of stuff. Oh, yeah. Night Train to Terror.
Oh, yeah, Night Train to Terror. Yeah.
Blu-ray Night Train to Terror, which is a weird anthology movie from the 80s, which is basically three unfinished movies edited together as an anthology film with a wraparound of Satan and God on a train.
And really bad and 80s really, people dancing.
Yeah, go to YouTube and watch that. Type in Night Train of Terror and see if you can find that song. I don't know what it's called right now, but it's friggin' amazing.
Yeah, and all I remember is that part and then the Richard Mole story, which was really gory, from what my memory anyway.
Really? I've never seen Night Train of Terror, so
okay.
It was cheap enough that I was like, I'm going to buy this just because.
Yeah, it's worth it, man. I'm going to try and show that at the cafe.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it for me. I mean, I just wanted to quickly bring up our black sales because we like to buy a lot of movies, and I have fun telling people about the movies I bought.
So hopefully we'll be able to talk about them all on here eventually.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll get around to it.
Of course we will.
If we unwrap them.
Oh. All right. So let's get on to our topic. So our topic is, as we've mentioned,
Robots Gone Wild.
Robots Gone Wild. I mean, we were originally going to just do like killer robots, but it just seemed a little limiting.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to open it up a bit. I mean, I've got a few titles I've got on my list that I couldn't have put in here if we were just doing killer
Me
robots
too.
So I wanted to expand it a little bit more, but yeah, there's a lot to talk about. I've got a lot of titles written down here, so and we're gonna try, and this is one of those topics that I'm, you know, I think we're of course gonna miss stuff out because there's so many titles with robots in them,
yeah.
That so, you know, forgive us if we've missed anything. I think we've gotten most of the big ones, but there certainly are some we'll probably miss, so feel free to let us know.
Yeah, and we're also going to admittedly probably gloss over some of these titles because there are some stuff we want to feel like is worthy of mentioning,
yeah,
but we haven't seen them or we don't remember enough about them to be really, you know, 100% on what we want to talk about. So there are going to be titles like that.
Yeah, and well, let's just see how it goes. Let's talk about some of our favorites, and then we can mention some other titles at the end if we if we're running out of time.
Sure.
Okay, so do you want to go first?
You can kick it off if you wish.
Okay, well, I will then. So the first one I'm going to bring up, I've kind of torn between what the first one I was going to bring up was, but I am going to go with probably not what you're expecting. I'm going to go with a Disney movie. And it's The Black Hole from 1979.
Oh, I knew you were going to do this.
Because it has one of my favorite killer robots.
That's that red guy.
Maximilian.
Yeah, Maximilian.
And he is awesome. And he's this big, silent, red scary robot that like floats around and has this like red eye thing, and he's terrifying.
The funny thing about Black Hole is I haven't seen the Black Hole.
You've never seen the Black Hole?
I've never seen the Black Hole, but I know that frickin' robot.
This movie, I love this movie.
I know, you any opportunity Josh gets to bring up the Black Hole, he does.
I loved this movie when I was a kid, and I've seen it recently, and I still love it. It still has a scene near the end that terrifies me still. I still think it's one of the scariest scenes, and it's so inappropriate for a kid's movie. Basically, it's a depiction of hell, which is pretty scary, and then I still, like, there's one point where I still close my eyes when I know it's coming because it scared me so bad. I can watch it, but I'm not comfortable with it. But basically, it's about this group of astronauts that are in this small spaceship that are flying around space, and they find this basically this ghost ship called the Cygnus that's this, like, monstrosity spaceship that's sort of hanging out on the edge of this black hole. And so they go and board the ship just to see what's up because it looks totally deserted. And they go on board, and basically the whole thing lights up. Turns out that it's basically inhabited. I keep saying basically again.
And
What's that?
And
Well, I always say But
it's okay. I say like a lot.
I just said again. See? Okay. So Damn it, now I'm totally aware of it. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
Thanks for letting the whole audience know, too.
You're welcome.
So they go onto the ship, and this mad scientist, basically, played by Maximilian Schell, is the...
Is that why the robot... Why is the robot called Maximilian, and he play... That's...
I can't remember why.
It's weird that the main villain's name, actor's name, is Maximilian, and the actual robot's called Maximilian.
It is weird.
Huh. Just a little A-side that I thought was pointless that I'd throw in.
But what happens is the group of them come across Maximilian Schell's character, Dr. Hans Reinhardt, and figure out that he's basically crazy and is trying to has this plan to go into the black hole. And he's created this sort of army of drones that are running the spaceship that are basically his old crew that have turned into that he's basically turned into robots. Anyways, along the way they have a couple of robots themselves. One's called Bob, one's called Vincent, and they come across this other one called Bob, and they're these cute little robots. Eventually they basically have to try and find a way to get off the spaceship. There's not a lot more to say about this because I'm totally struggling right now. So it got a really good cast. Robert Forster's in it, as well as Yvette Mimieux, Joseph Bottoms, Ernest Borgnine, and Anthony Perkins. So it's got a really killer cast, but this is a really scary movie, and it's got a really... the effects in this one are awesome. It came from the age of Star Wars, just after Star Wars, so a lot of miniatures, and it's so well done. But this robot, Maximilian, is very scary, and even scarier by the end of the movie.
Was this Disney's attempt to cash in on Star Wars, do you think?
I think partially. This was in Disney's... kind of when they were going into darker territory, like they were doing movies like Something Wicked This Way Comes and
Watcher in
the
Woods.
Witch Mountain movies and this. And I'm not sure. Like it definitely seems not like a kid's movie.
Because I remember that I seem to recall this movie got like really bad reception when it came out too. Like it was just thrashed by critics and stuff, wasn't it?
It was. And I saw it when it came out, and I bought the toys and everything when I was a little kid. But it definitely scarred me. I mean, the last 5 minutes of this movie still screw me up, like I said. I mean, it's pretty scary stuff.
You can't say that much about kids' movies.
What's that?
You can't say that much about kids' movies that they mess you up.
This one messed me up.
So that's got to be a recommendation for me to see it, because anything that...
And it also started my appreciation of Robert Forster. The guy's awesome, and he's great as the captain of the Palomino.
Anything that can screw up a little tiny Josh... all these years later makes me want to see it.
Yeah, it was right up there. Two Robert Forster movies screwed me up because Alligator screwed me up as well.
Oh, two Robert Forster in a row because Alligator's 1980, so...
Yeah, and they both screwed me up when I was a kid.
Way to go, Robert Forster. Way to go.
So that would be like my number one killer robot movie.
Your number one killer robot movie? I'm going to mention one really quickly that you won't expect me to bring up, because that's why I'm going to bring it up, just because I want to get out of the way, is it's The Iron Giant from 1989.
Oh, yeah.
Animated flick directed by Brad Bird, who went on to do The Incredibles and...
Did he do Cars?
Ratatouille for Pixar. And he also did Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is the fourth one. Oh, that was his first live-action movie. And Iron Giant's basically about a robot who comes down from space, who's befriended by a little boy. And he's a friendly robot, so he does all the kind of thing. He plays with the kid, has fun with him and everything. And then he decides, you know, this robot's not so bad, but the FBI and everything doesn't think so. So it's about him protecting this robot from the FBI. It's very whimsical in its delivery. The robot's a big hulking, kind of like looks like a 50s monster movie robot you'd imagine to look like. Just the gray metal with the, like, the robot rocketeer kind of head.
Yeah.
And just the loose joints with the just the arms and the big gauntlets and things like that. And it's
He's a pretty cool looking robot.
Yeah, he's a cool looking robot, and it's a very sweet movie. It's got its heart in the right place. It's very entertaining. It's just a movie that I can find myself smiling at every time I watch it, and I just feel like it hasn't gotten kind of the love and respect it deserves when all these other animated movies are becoming so beloved.
Well, I think a lot of animation nerds really like this one.
Well, I'm not really an animation nerd, but I still love it, so yeah. What's that going to say?
It has some Superman references in it, too,
I think
it
does, yeah. But it's a really fun one. I think you should check it out if you're, even if you're not really into animation like Josh, it's something you should probably check out because it's a pretty fun little movie. It's got its heart in the right place, and that's really what matters when it comes to animation.
Yeah, it's been on my radar for a long time, and I know it's definitely regarded as a step up above the usual the usual Disney stuff, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty good movie.
Great.
Pretty good movie.
That is a surprising one for you to bring up first. Well, is that your favorite?
It's up there. I just didn't want to go with the obvious ones.
Right.
Because my favorites are the obvious ones.
Right. All right, well, I'm going to go with another, well, I don't know if it's an obvious one, probably obvious for me, but, and that's Saturn III from 1980.
I knew this was coming eventually.
Well, it is one of, yeah, that robot in that is awesome. Okay, so this movie is directed by Stanley Donen, who was like a odd choice for the director because this guy came from a background in musicals. He did Singing in the Rain and like Charade and The Pajama Game and... A really weird choice for like a crazed robot.
That
movie.
Is a weird choice, especially since Singing in the Rain is like my favorite musical of all time, probably.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a weird. You watch Singing in the Rain, and then you think of a pervy Kirk Douglas and his pervy robots from the same director. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. Now I can't remember the story here, but I think that what happened is. Donen couldn't do it. He couldn't direct the movie. Like, he was failing miserably. This movie's got a crazy production history behind it. Mm-hmm. And there's so few websites devoted to it. I picked up the Scream Factory disc, but I haven't listened to the commentary yet. So I don't know how much of it's covered on there. But basically, the director got fired, and the production designer, John Barry, who had done the Superman movies and so forth, he took over, I believe. But it's got this robot in it called Hector, and he's awesome. He's like this super tall robot with these kind of eyes that look kind of like Number 5 from Short Circuit. And but he's a really, really tall robot.
Isn't
and,
he sort of headless too, though?
Well, he's got this like kind of eye, like Number 5, like this just this kind of eyepiece. Mm,
okay.
Thing. And he makes this really weird sound. And it's only the three characters. It's Harvey Keitel is kind of a mad scientist, Kirk Douglas and Farrah Fawcett, and they're like these oddly matched couple on the space station.
Was it Harvey Keitel who was pervy, or was it Kirk Douglas?
Well,
because
Harvey Keitel was pervy,
because
for sure. Because
the only time I've seen this movie was late night TV in the 80s when I was a kid, and I'm pretty sure it went over my head when I was that age. I just remember. There's this cool gold robot in this movie.
Yeah.
And I remember Farrah Fawcett like slinking around in like leotards and shit.
Yeah, no, she was wearing... Well, you saw... This is a bit infamous because you did see Farrah Fawcett's boobs for like a split second.
No, okay.
And that was a big deal at the time. And there is this cut scene. I think it might be on the Scream disc where she's prancing around in this kind of black, almost like, you know, kind of like sexy, almost
yeah, that's
S&M-y
the thing I've
outfit.
Seen.
Yeah.
It's like kind of like a leotard with like a gold collar yeah. on it or something. Yeah. That's the scene I've seen on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah, that wasn't in the actual movie, but I think it was a cut scene, basically. But as far as pervy goes, like the Harvey Keitel character has got the hots for Farrah Fawcett, and in turn, the robot kind of has the hots for...
So is Harvey Keitel the creator of the robot then?
He's kind of a mad scientist, kind of takes over the robot.
Oh, okay.
And then Kirk Douglas is kind of pervy because he wanted to be in this movie when he was like 30 years older than Farrah Fawcett. But if I was Kirk Douglas and I could, I'd probably want to be in a movie with Farrah Fawcett too at that time. But it's a really fun movie. Just because, and it's the scope of this movie. I think it had like one of the biggest sci-fi sets, like spaceship sets ever done at the time. So it was like this mammoth space station set was created, and it's a cool movie. I mean, the robot's pretty neat, and it's menacing, and it's chasing Farrah Fawcett around the space station. You know, there's scenes where she's like hiding underneath like catwalks and stuff, and you can see the robot over top. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not as good as I remembered it, but if we're just talking, I'm trying to just think of robots here, and this robot was awesome, and I still think so.
Well, since you talked about it a little bit about Saturn 3, I'm going to bring up Short Circuit.
Sure.
Just because number 5 is Alive.
God, I feel like we're playing like good cop, bad cop right now.
Why? Because I'm doing all the good movies and yeah. all the kiddie movies, and you're doing all the like dark, demented stuff. Don't worry, it's coming.
Okay.
It's coming. But yeah, I just want to briefly talk about Short Circuit because I remember back in when I was a kid, they used to have these free weekends on the movie channels.
Right.
And they would have a weekend where it'd be free for everybody, and then I would just binge on everything they were showing. And this is like 1986. So I watched, you know, I would watch Trick or Treat, The Kindred, you know, all these horror movies, Maximum Overdrive. That's the first time I saw Maximum Overdrive was in 1986 on this movie channel. American Ninja, you know, all these right. like B movies, culty movies. But then there was Short Circuit, which I saw one afternoon, and I loved Short Circuit yeah. when I was a kid. It was about a robot who's made by the military for war, but kind of gets his own little conscience that that's not good. He escapes from the military base. His name's Johnny Five. They call him, they dub him. Steve Guttenberg's the scientist guy who has right. who has to hunt him down. And Ally Sheedy's the girl who kind of takes in this Johnny Five, and he's processing stuff, reading all these books. He's like, input, need input. And he's learning about what it takes to be a human being and realizing that war is bad and everything. It's kind of a schmaltzy, shitty kind of plot in a way, but it's just that robot has so much character in that movie. Yeah.
Who did the voice, you know?
I don't remember, but he just had so much character. I mean, I remember him when he first gets out being at a gas station looking at this pop machine going, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too, because he's reading yeah. a Dr. Pepper machine. And I just remember that was really fun. Fisher Stevens is the stereotypical middle like East Indian assistant to Steve Guttenberg, who's always doing the throwing his hands in the air like, oh, I can't handle this kind of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it's a fun movie. I don't think it would probably hold up these days because I haven't seen it in a while.
Was there a sequel?
It was popular enough that there was a sequel.
Yeah.
And surprisingly enough, I saw that one in the theaters.
Ooh.
So there you go. And that's all I'm saying about Short Circuit.
Doesn't the robot in Short Circuit kind of look like Wall-E?
Kind of in a way, yeah, and the face features, because yeah. he's got the big eyes with the like flappable eyebrows on
right,
him.
Right, yeah.
So he does kind of look like Wall-E in a way. And while we're on these cutesy robot movies, I'll just quickly throw one out there before we move on. Do you remember the year after Short Circuit came out, there seemed to be this trend about cutesy robot movies. There was that Batteries Not Included movie.
Right.
Which was basically small alien robots coming down and going into this old folks home and helping the old folks learn to live life and enjoy themselves while this developer's trying to take over the old folks home and destroy it. I remember really liking that movie. It was a Steven Spielberg production. It was cutesy. Yeah. Had like Jessica Tandy in it and all those
Like the Cocoon Crew.
The Cocoon Crew, only with robots. But that was a pretty fun movie, too. Kind of harmless. And I think I got to go dark on the next one, because I'm talking two harmless kiddie movies right now. And
yeah.
Let's move on from this here.
You've been pretty harmless so far.
Not much longer.
Okay, I'm not going to be harmless, though. So I'm going to go on to another one. Now, this one, I really love the concept of this movie. And it really excited me. And it's really unfortunate that after this movie, they never went anywhere with it. But this is called Westworld. Yeah. And have you seen Westworld?
A long time ago. And aren't they developing it into a TV show right now?
They are. It's coming out next year.
Okay.
The premise is, so it's directed by Michael Crichton, who, you know, we all know as, you know, the...
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, he's done a doctor that has also done a lot of sci-fi.
Yeah, Jurassic Park. He also did ER, the TV series, which was a huge hit in the 90s.
And he did another movie we're going to talk about on this, I'm sure.
We're going to talk about it after we talk about Westworld.
Okay, so Westworld, the story is, it's a theme park. That people can go to in the future, and you can go to this theme park, and there's different theme parks that you can go to. So one of them is Westworld, one of them is like Roman World, and it's you go to it, and it's populated by other humans that are guests, and then androids who are playing parts in the theme world to give you this experience of being in that time period. So like, for example, in Westworld, there's like, you can go into a saloon and there's, you know, prostitutes and
I'm going into Westworld right now.
It's really cool. And I thought this concept could have gone so far, and it was done really well in this movie. They made a sequel called Future World that just didn't really go anywhere. And I'm not sure what's going to happen with the TV series.
Was Yul Brynner the main actor in Westworld? Am I correct in that?
So the Yul Brynner was in it. So the main actors were James Brolin and Richard Benjamin.
Okay.
James Brolin, you know, from like The Car and
Amityville Horror.
And Barbara Streisand's husband.
Was he in Amityville Horror?
Yeah, he was in Amityville Horror. And Richard Benjamin, I just remember him from Saturday the 14th.
Yeah.
But Yul Brynner played this robot.
Yeah, and he was like the sheriff.
He was a cowboy, but he was cowboy. A bad cowboy.
Yeah, right.
And what happens is the robots go crazy in this movie and turn homicidal. So the Yul Brynner character is chasing Richard Benjamin and James Brolin through the desert, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really well done, tight movie and really enjoyable. Again, this is another one that hasn't, I don't get why this hasn't had like a ultra special edition released from somebody, because it's such a great movie. It's come out of like bare bones DVD. I think it's out of print now, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a great flick, and I guess we'll see what happens. Sequel, not so much. No, it's called Future World with Peter Fonda, and it just wasn't very good. And it should have been. Like, if you're doing like a theme park where you're having different worlds and robots populating them, you could do whatever you want.
So
what is any world?
What's the world in the sequel?
I don't remember. It was like Lame World.
Lame World. But Michael Crichton, he also did Terminal Man,
right?
Which is also kind of a
George Segal. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a guy getting a computer embedded in his brain,
right?
That makes him psychotic. But we said we weren't talking about computers,
right?
But the other Michael Crichton movie that we were going to bring up anyway is called Runaway, from 1984, and this is a movie that I love, and I can't explain my love for it. Well, I probably can, and we probably will, but it's a movie that when I saw it recently, I was out at the thrift store, and I saw this DVD sitting on the shelf, brand new. I almost plotzed.
Plotzed?
Plotzed!
What does that mean?
It's an 80s term in Jewish movies.
Oh.
Plotzing. It's like dropping a load.
Ew, you almost went to the bathroom?
Yeah, I almost crapped my pants.
Oh.
But... this is getting way off track. Gross. But anyway, Runaway is set in a future world where humans have become so dependent on robots for everything. You know, they're your maids, they're your butlers, it's kind of like the future world that you still picture where you can walk into a room and tell your house to do something and it'll do it.
And they've like the Jetsons.
Kind of like the Jetsons, yeah, but with a little bit of an evil twist to it. And it's Tom Selleck is starring in it, and he's kind of like a robot policeman in a way, like he's the one who's called in when these robots malfunction. And this is when Tom Selleck was still on the highs of his Magnum PI days. And he also had just the previous year made High Road to China.
Yeah.
Where he played a World War II fighter plane pilot. I just remember I saw this movie with my dad in the theaters back in 1983, High Road to China, and I loved it, and I wish I could watch it again. It's just I'm too cheap to dish out for the DVD.
Because is it out on disc?
It's out on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Oh,
and
really?
I'm just not sure if it's going to be any good, so I've been kind of hesitant to buy it, because I remember loving it when I was a kid in theaters.
But I always felt like that was his attempt to try and redeem himself for
It was his Indiana Jones attempt, because he was cast in Raiders, and then he didn't get it, right?
He didn't look right.
He didn't look right, no. But Runaways has him as this malfunction. He goes after malfunctioning robots, but he has to contend with this psychopath played by Gene Simmons of the rock group Kiss, mm-hmm. who has decided to use these robots to his advantage to reign terror over the city. He's got these really sweet spider-like robots that have needles in the tips that inject people with poisons and things like that. And isn't it the first movie apart from Kiss Phantom Meets the Park that Gene Simmons was in?
I'm not sure. He was in Never Too Young to Die.
That was in 86.
That was in 86.
Yeah, I think Runaway was his first movie.
Yeah, I think
when
it might have been.
Decided he wanted to ditch Paul and start trying to be an actor instead of doing the crappy glam rock Kiss was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And Runaway is just a really fun movie.
It's
just crazy. There's the scene on an elevator with those robot spiders that still kind of creeps me out, and Tom Selleck was pretty badass in it, and I hate to say it because I've never found Tom Selleck to be badass in anything. And it's just Michael Crichton seems to have this thing for technology going crazy, because even Jurassic Park has that theme, right? Because the dinosaurs are cloned, and I guess his background as a doctor would be why he's doing this interests him. But Runaway, it's kind of obscure for him. Kind of like Westworld is a little bit obscure for him, but it's well worth checking out. It's a lot of fun. It's a product of the 80s.
Yeah, but Christy Alley when she was hot.
It's got that world of it where it's like that future world where you're kind of like, we want this in our society, but what if it goes wrong?
And,
you know, it's kind of a scary thought to think that we might still be heading towards a future where we can just walk in our house and give a voice command and get whatever we want.
It is scary though, because the robots could go crazy, just mm-hmm. like these movies depict, right?
I mean, and that's why Runaway's really good, and Gene Simmons is pretty over the top, and not as over the top as Never Too Young to Die, but still over the top enough to please the hell out of me.
He's totally over the top, and Cynthia Rhodes is in it too from Dirty Dancing, and she's Selleck's partner.
I thought she was really cute in that movie.
Yeah,
too.
She was really cute.
Yeah,
it was shot in Vancouver. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well.
Canada.
I say how back when it was cool to shoot here.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I remember, I just remember a lot on at a construction site. Was there a lot of?
Yeah, that's where the elevator scene takes place, where they're like trying to hunt them down, and they end up at the construction site, and they get trapped on that elevator with those spider robots.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. If you haven't seen it, you should probably check it out, because you know, it's kind of like a dystopian like viewpoint on the future where robots go wild.
All right, so I guess while we're on the the next one I'd like to bring up, just I don't know if this is going to be controversial for me to bring this up or not, but
Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, we are talking about androids at some point, and mm-hmm. and I mean, my favorite android movie is Blade Runner.
Yep,
it's got to be. I mean, I think most people listening to this podcast have seen Blade Runner before. I just couldn't. I mean, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. I can mm-hmm. still watch that movie and get more out of it. I still enjoy it a lot. I like the director's cut.
Okay.
The one without the voiceover.
About four cuts out there.
Yeah, I like the one without the voiceover.
Okay.
Even though I did kind of like the whole Philip Marlowe thing, but I do like the director's cut the best, okay. I think. But it's this guy, and he's his job is to hunt down
rogue androids.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't want to get a lot into this because I'm sure everyone's seen it. But I couldn't let a killer robot or robots gone wild, because I mean, that's the whole premise of this mm-hmm. movie, is these robots have gone wild, and Harrison Ford needs to track them down.
Well, I mean, and it's got Rutger Hauer at his craziest.
Yeah.
And Daryl Hannah at her sexiest.
Daryl Hannah as Pris. I've always wanted to get another tattoo, and it's always been Pris. That's so, always what I thought I'd do.
You've got two bonuses there, and you've got Harrison Ford back when he was still badass, because he was coming off being Han Solo, and then he plays Deckard.
Yeah.
And he's so good in it, too.
He is, and Brian James is also in it. Because
it's totally, you're totally right. It's totally a futuristic Philip Marlowe kind of feel to it. And is it based on Philip K. Dick?
Yeah, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
And Philip K. Dick, his stuff was also made into, like, Total Recall and things like that. He's a very interesting science fiction writer because his themes are always kind of taking a reality and throwing them in a switch.
Yeah.
I remember he wrote I just recently bought one of his books, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically tells the story of what if Germany was to win World War II. And it tells kind of the story about that. So he's always kind of been a cutting edge. He was always a cutting edge kind of sci-fi writer. And you can see that in Blade Runner, because Blade Runner is a very cutting edge movie. If you watch it today, you can see what it inspired.
Blade Runner, I feel I've watched
Matrix it. Wouldn't have existed without
Blade Runner. I've seen it so many times, and I feel like it still holds up like it was made now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like you can still watch Blade Runner and it feels like a new movie.
Yeah.
And they are doing a sequel, unfortunately. Ridley Scott actually has just announced that he's not a part of it, which is interesting. I think that's really shitty. I wish they wouldn't be making a sequel. I don't even care if it's good.
Well,
it's one of these movies that's so iconic, and I just wish they just leave it alone.
Well, that's like me. I almost wish they wouldn't have made sequels to The Matrix.
True, yeah.
Because I think The Matrix, the original, is a very pretty flawless science fiction movie. Science fiction action movie, and then they ruined it by making those sequels.
That's true. Well, the thing with Blade Runner, though, is that it's one of these movies that, like, so many people have so many interpretations about what it means, what happened, what the characters were.
Well, yeah, and then I guess that also would vary by cut.
Exactly. And I just think by making a sequel to that, I'm imagining you're going to answer some of those questions. And I don't really want them to be answered. I kind of it's kind of like Cemetery Man. I just kind of like coming away from a movie and you can talk about it, but everyone kind of has their own thoughts.
That's what makes watching movies exciting in the first place, is when you discover these movies that can make you have these discussions.
Yeah.
I mean, you can come out of any old frickin' movie and be like, yeah, that was okay. But if to come out of a movie and actually be thinking to yourself, this is what I get from it, and then talking to someone and asking them what they got from it and having differing opinions and comparing your opinions, that's what makes being a movie fan the greatest thing.
Exactly. And Blade Runner is one of the best for that. And it's got, and people still don't agree with what it all means. Yeah. And it's not weird. It's not like you're walking out of Blade Runner going, whoa, I had no idea what happened there. Mm-hmm. You do know what happened, but it's just trying to sort of, there's a lot of open questions, but they're not annoying. It's still a story that wraps up.
Yeah. And the funniest thing about Blade Runner is when I saw it as a kid, I hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Absolutely hated it when I saw it as a kid.
I saw it in the theaters. I loved Harrison Ford, and it's just so visually stunning still.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a while, and I'd really like to revisit it.
Oh yeah.
Just because, I mean, I remember they put out that really cool special edition that came in, like, the briefcase.
Yeah, I have that.
And, you know, that was kind of neat, but
that's the first Blu-ray I bought before I even had a Blu-ray player.
Wouldn't look very good on your shelf because it's just so bulky. But yeah, it's a pretty cool-looking edition.
It is.
And,
yeah,
let's just hope that this sequel ends up being trashed.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these sequels that I might just avoid just to sort of keep this movie where it is. But, I mean, as far as, like, android movies, I mean, it doesn't get much better than this. There's some other androids that will, I'm sure, are going to come up tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But the, like, Roy Batty, who Rutger Hauer plays, is, like, the ultimate android as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and Rutger Hauer's awesome. No matter what. I mean, there's other movies that we will talk about in future episodes with Rutger Hauer that I love to death.
I'm sure.
And I'm sure they're going to come up. But yeah, Blade Runner is probably definitely in the top three android movies of all time. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other ones that's in the top three, let's get to some obvious ones now, is Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, James Cameron's 1984 movie. It was only the second movie he directed. His first movie was Piranha 2, The Spawning, which is better left kind of ignored.
I've never seen that. Have you?
Yeah.
It's, they fly.
Yeah. He had been working for Roger Corman already. He did like set design on, I believe it was Galaxy of Terror or
Forbidden Planet. Forbidden, yeah.
Forbidden World.
Maybe
one
both.
Of those two.
Yeah.
Maybe both. But Roger Corman gave him this opportunity to direct a sequel to Piranha 2, and I guess he made them fly. And it's got Lance Henriksen in it, which is a bonus, because Lance Henriksen was originally supposed to be the Terminator.
Right, yeah.
And he was
God,
brought
that
would
in, have been weird, eh?
I know. He was brought in to be the model, kind of, for the Stan Winston's android creation, like the robot creation. But they ended up casting Schwarzenegger, and this is my favorite Schwarzenegger movie of all time.
Yeah.
This is...
We're talking about the first Terminator.
The first Terminator.
Yeah, I agree.
This is where... Schwarzenegger is... In the 80s, he was a great action hero. I mean, he wasn't the greatest at English, obviously. But, I mean, he was a great action hero because he was muscular. He had his puns, like Commando, which I love to death. You know, he had his quips after he took out the bad guys. He was a presence
you
in those
knew
movies,
him.
Right?
You feel like you knew him.
Yeah, like he was kind of like, he was a likable guy, yeah. But you wouldn't want to cross him because he'd snap your neck like a twig. But in Terminator, he was a bad motherfucker. Like, yeah. Seriously. It's basically him, he plays a robot sent back into present day from the future to kill John Connor. Or Sarah Connor, sorry.
Sarah Connor, yeah.
To kill Sarah Connor because she is going to give birth to...
John Connor.
John Connor, who is going to lead a rebellion against the machines in the future and overthrow Skynet, which is this computer that kind of controls everything. I know we said no computers, but there's all these Terminators in it, so it's okay. And then the movie opens with this really cool miniature kind of set with these tanks rolling over skulls and these ships flying and shooting lasers, like this battle against in the future against these robots before shifting into 80s LA. And you know, the first appearance of Schwarzenegger is he shows up naked, takes out some punkers to steal their clothes.
Bill Paxton,
yep. And there's somebody else too, but I can't remember. Goes into a bar, beats them up, goes after Sarah Connor. The way he goes after Sarah Connor, looks in a phone book, goes down the names, kills anyone in his path.
Yeah.
And then Michael Biehn plays Kyle Reese, who's been sent from the future to protect Sarah Connor from this.
So cool.
From this Terminator. And he's pretty badass, too.
Yeah.
Linda Hamilton isn't as badass as she is in Terminator 2.
No.
But she makes a good kind of heroine, like savior kind of figure. But it's all about, for me, this is all about Schwarzenegger. Just running rampant, killing a frigging police station full of people.
Right.
Murdering his way towards Sarah Connor. Yeah, I'll be back. That's where it came from. He says that in almost every single movie after Terminator.
Yeah.
And Stan Winston's awesome android effects in that at the end after, you know, basically his Arnold showed his true form.
Those are stop motion, right?
They're stop motion, but they're still friggin' amazing to this day.
Yeah, they are cool.
And, you know, Terminator 2, don't get me wrong. I love Terminator 2 also, but I love it for a different reason than I like Terminator 1. Terminator 2 is a lot of people's favorite, but that's because it's the blockbuster Hollywood movie of the series.
Yeah.
I mean, it brought back all the principal cast members, and it switched gears so that it had John Connor as a teenager played by Edward Furlong.
Right.
But this time, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator is there to protect him instead of destroy him from this T-1000, more advanced cybernetic Terminator played by Robert Patrick.
Right.
Whose brother is the singer for the band Filter.
Oh,
who did Hey
that.
Man, Nice Shot in the 90s.
Listen to you, Mr. Trivia tonight.
Yeah, Mr. Trivia today. But I like that movie for an entirely different reason, but if I'm going to watch any movie from the Terminator series, it's going to be that first one, because that is the pinnacle for me of Android movies. Like, that's my favorite Android movie. I'm not knocking your Blade Runner, but Terminator's my top pick.
It's pretty hard to argue with that, and I completely agree that of the series, that's my favorite by far. I T2 whatever,
I
like enjoy
T2.
It's just not one I go back to. Like, the one I'm gonna go back to is the first one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I watch Terminator probably once a year.
Yeah.
And I watch Terminator 2 maybe once every 3 years.
Yeah, and the third one I thought was okay. Is that the third one with Claire Danes?
Yeah, the third one was pretty good.
It was okay.
Christina Loken as the, like, evil female Terminator in it. And the thing I remember most about part three is Arnold hanging on the end of a crane being dragged through a building.
Right.
Like a moving truck crane.
Yeah, I remember
being
that.
Being dragged through a building. That's the least said about salvation, the better. That movie,
I haven't seen that.
That
one.
Movie's kind of just become a punchline now for a YouTube video of Christian Bale freaking out on set when they were filming it.
Well, it just sounds like a mess. I mean, the story I heard was that Bale said he would only do it if they made his character, made his part as big as the other. I don't know who the lead was in that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Whoever the lead was, Bale wanted his character to be as big a role as the other one.
Yeah.
So they were rewriting basically to accommodate this. And
I mean, and they're bringing out another one next year
with Arnie, right?
With Arnie. And I'm not pleased. I think it should be done.
So the first three were decent, and then leave it at that.
Yeah, leave it at that.
Did you see the TV series?
I saw one episode and it didn't seem like it was going to be too bad.
Was it the Sarah Connor Chronicles?
Yeah. And I mean, it's more of the T2 badass Sarah Connor in the series than
it
is the kind of victimized Sarah Connor of the original.
And David Silver from 90210.
But I mean, as much as I rag on James Cameron now because of Avatar and Titanic and everything, that guy made some sweet fucking movies in the 80s.
He did.
Like, he made Terminator. He made Terminator 2. He made The Abyss, which is my favorite underwater movie of all time. Like, that were coming out around that time. And then he also made another Android movie, which I can bring up real briefly. He made Aliens.
Yeah.
Which has an iconic Android in itself with Lance Henriksen playing Bishop.
Yeah.
And Androids are not new to the Alien series, because in Alien, Ridley Scott's 1979 Alien, they had an Android called Ash.
Yeah.
And you didn't know this guy was an Android. You just thought he was a scumbag through the whole movie until he gets decapitated and he's still fucking alive.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love James Cameron's 80s movies. I don't know what happened to him. I think he got too full of himself.
Seems like it, yeah.
Seems like it. But definitely, if you're going to watch any Android movies we've talked about today, Terminator.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Terminator and Blade Runner. Watch a double feature.
Yeah. That's a long night, but worth it.
All right. So, wow, we're getting... well, hopefully you guys are enjoying listening, so we're just going to keep going here. So the next one I'd like to bring up, I think I'm going to bring up Hardware, which is a Richard Stanley movie from 1990. And this is a lot more of a low-key movie, especially after talking about like the Terminator and stuff. This is like pretty much takes place in one apartment for the most part. So Richard Stanley was a pretty cool director at the time. He this was his first movie. He followed this up with a movie called Dust Devil that was also pretty cool, and then he got onto the island with Dr. Moreau and got fired, and he's had a difficult career.
He didn't have
since.
A very good trip on the island of Dr. Moreau.
No, there's like a documentary about that. Did you know
that? I actually want to see that, because I think it'd be interesting.
Just came out.
I heard a lot of the troubles on Dr. Moreau were Marlon Brando and, you know, his diva kind of ways,
well.
And Val Kilmer and all that. And I think that's, I always think it's interesting to watch train wreck documentaries about movies. I don't know why I find that so intriguing.
Yeah.
Like, if they ever made a Heaven's Gate documentary, I'm sure I'd want to watch that
too.
Oh,
for sure. There's a book about it.
But I mean, it's just weird to see how things could go so off the rails.
Yeah. And Stanley was a cool dude. I mean, he had vision and,
I mean, like, Hardware was a movie I remember when it first came out. Nobody knew what it was.
No.
And I remember I rented it one day on VHS
tape.
Had a
cool cover, eh?
And I loved it. I just thought it was a great movie. Like, very low key, like you said, but that Mark 13 robot in it was pretty badass.
Right.
I mean, it was Stacey Travis was the main actress in it, and her boyfriend's kind of a scavenger type.
Right.
And he finds this robot and brings it back. And, you know, it brings itself back to life, basically, and starts killing people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cool-looking robot. It's got an American flag painted across its skull.
Yeah.
I remember that much. And I remember there's a part where it pokes someone's eyes out, which was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And I also remember the Wibbly Wobbly Walk, which was a song one of the overweight, grossly obese characters would sing. We all walk the wibbly wobbly walk. We all talk the wibbly wobbly talk. Yeah, he was. And Iggy Pop was the radio DJ who you never see. It was kind of like a post-apocalyptic movie mixed with, you know, a psychotic robot.
Yeah, it's a cool movie. And I remember the beginning part of this, like the opening scenes in this movie is this guy walking across the desert, this nomad guy. Mm-hmm. And he's... I was really into this band.
Not Dylan McDermott, right?
It's not Dylan McDermott. No. I think Dylan McDermott actually buys Mark 13 off this guy.
Oh, okay.
But the Nomad guy is played by a guy named Carl McCoy. And Carl McCoy was the lead singer of this band I used to really dig called Fields of the Nephilim. They were this goth band from that time period, like the late 80s and early 90s, and they had some really cool albums.
So were they on the soundtrack? Because I remember the soundtrack was a lot of that kind of stuff.
I'm not sure if they were.
Like a lot of industrial, gothy kind of stuff was on that soundtrack.
They might have been. I mean, obviously Stanley knew them because he wouldn't, like, why else would Carl McCoy have been in it? I mean, if you want to check out this band, check out their second album called The Nephilim, or an album called Dawn Razor. They're both really excellent albums for goth rock. But it was pretty cool seeing him, and he just looked so badass in this mm-hmm. movie. And Lemmy from Motorhead is also in this.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, but it's a cool movie, and the robot's really neat in this, and it is definitely a killer robot.
Yeah, it's kind of like a punk rock apocalypse movie.
Definitely.
In a way. Yeah.
It's a fun flick, and worth seeking out if you can find it. And yeah, follow the career of Richard Stanley, and the guy's pretty fascinating dude. I mean, if you watch this, watch Dust Devil, and if you can get your hands on the Dust Devil a special edition that Dark Sky, I think, put out.
No, it was Subversive. No longer with us.
Can't get that. There was some documentaries on there. There was one about voodoo, and there was one about Nazis and the occult. And these were some pretty wicked documentaries, dude. So if you can find Richard Stanley's documentaries, I'd highly recommend them as well. I'm looking forward to seeing this one about Moreau.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's it for Hardware.
That's it for Hardware. So we're going to hit the next obvious one I have written down. And you know what this is, don't you, Josh? This is RoboCop.
Oh, I don't.
You didn't know I was going to bring up RoboCop?
Oh, wait. You know, can I just jump in for one sec? Because there's one thing I forgot to mention about Terminator. There was a ripoff of Terminator called Lady Terminator.
I've wanted to see that movie forever, and I haven't.
That I just... I don't know. I think
isn't it
Mondo
Taiwanese?
Macabre put it out. I think it's Turkish or something.
Turkish, okay.
I don't know. It's Indonesian, but it's batshit crazy.
Dude, is this out on Blu-ray or DVD?
Mondo Macabre put it out on DVD.
We're buying.
It's good.
I'm buying this.
It's really cool.
Do you have this?
I do.
We're watching this.
We can.
Eventually.
I only have it on VHS, so. But we can watch it right now if you want. Hmm. Well, not right now, but
sounds,
you know.
Sounds pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome, and it's really fun, and it's bizarre. And there's a guy with the mullet that's super hilarious. Anyway, I just wanted to mention Lady Terminator because I don't know when else I'd mention it.
Yeah, probably not for a while.
But it's pretty much a copy of Terminator with a chick who gets naked.
Okay, sold. Okay. So anyway, back to RoboCop.
Okay.
RoboCop was a 1987 movie directed by Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah.
Who most people know now for Basic Instinct, Starship Troopers, Showgirls.
Yeah, hell yeah, Showgirls.
Josh's favorite movie of all time, Showgirls.
It's one of my favorite cult movies of all time.
But he also did some interesting movies before in his homeland, which I believe he's Swedish, right?
I think so.
Yeah, he did a movie called The Fifth Man, which is about a lady murdering her husband that was really cool. But RoboCop was sort of his breakthrough movie.
Yeah.
And it's about a Detroit of the future. What?
Are we just going to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about Detroit of the future where a cop called Murphy, played by the man Peter Weller, he gets shot down by Kurtwood Smith and his cronies. Kurtwood Smith was known as the dad on that 70s show, but you would never know it from how fucking badass he is in this movie.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome.
It's got that scene that was forever censored until the unrated cut came out of him basically massacring Murphy and shooting off his body parts.
Yeah.
And he comes back. He's reconstructed into this robot who's the ultimate lawman, RoboCop. But he has still the human memories tormenting him, and he sets out to wipe out corruption with his partner, played by Karen Allen. And there's a lot
Nancy Allen.
Nancy Allen, sorry. And there's a lot of really cool satirical visuals in it, and that Ed 209, the big robot with the machine guns, you have 2 seconds to comply, just shooting businessmen out the windows, and super ultra-violent movie, people melting down from toxic waste.
Oh, that's an awesome scene.
Murphy just blowing people up. I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Just all this cool stuff in it. It's so subversive, so violent, so entertaining.
Yeah.
It's just like I love RoboCop. I never saw the remake because I don't care, because RoboCop's a perfect movie on its own.
Yeah.
RoboCop 2 tried to be really darker, and it was mildly...
Weller was back for that, right?
Weller was back, and it went more of a bent about a drug addicting everyone in the town. It was really darkly themed. Frank Miller, who did the Sin City comics and things like that, was a co-writer on it and everything.
Okay.
And then came RoboCop 3, which had Robert John Burke flying around as RoboCop fighting ninjas. And we've said in the past episodes that this is Josh's favorite RoboCop movie.
Well, I do love Robert John Burke. I think he's a great actor.
He is cool, but RoboCop 3, not so much. But RoboCop's really good.
Have I said that?
We've made fun about it in the past.
That's not true. But RoboCop 1 is my favorite.
But RoboCop's an awesome movie. Skip the remake. Watch maybe part 2 just to get a scene of how RoboCop could possibly get darker than the original.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you know anything about these RoboCop Prime Directive TV movies? Do you know what those are all about?
They were a Canadian shot TV show.
Okay.
And it's kind of like a spinoff of the TV show. It's pretty low budget and weak. Kind of like the Universal Soldier movies that were shot in Canada in between Van Damme and the Dolph Lundgren movies. I would say don't bother with them.
Don't bother. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew they existed. I've never known what they are.
Yeah, I think RoboCop is really cool.
Cool. Okay, well, the next one I'm going to bring up is another kind of Android-y type movie.
I just want to mention real quick, if we seem a little scatterbrained, it's because we're too busy looking at our time. And
yeah.
Yeah. So Josh got a little confused, but it's okay now.
Well, the thing is, we don't like to edit, so you're just kind of hearing some of this stuff. Yeah. So
we don't edit because we're lazy, so too bad.
We're not lazy. I just kind of think it's nice to just have people know that what you see is what you get.
What you see is what you get. Go on.
Okay, so on that note, I think we should go over a little bit, frankly.
Okay.
Because I there's still a bunch more to talk
about. Go ahead.
All right, cool.
Bring her.
So the next one I'd like to bring up is Deadly Friend.
Oh, God, why? Why Deadly Friend?
I know, man. It's much maligned, but I like it.
Yeah, yeah, you
1986,
would.
Oh, directed Jesus Christ. By Wes Craven.
Yeah, way to go, Wes.
This is a love it or hate it type movie.
This is I'm Wes Craven. I made Nightmare on Elm Street. Now I'm going to bring some Nightmare on Elm Street imagery into a killer robot movie.
Listen, it's a love it or hate it.
I hate it.
I love it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
So,
what were we saying earlier that lost you cred?
I can't remember.
Well, this has lost you cred, too.
No, this hasn't lost me cred. Not as much as whatever the other thing was. Good thing we forgot.
I know.
I'm sure. Well, I've lost a lot of cred because I haven't seen The Burning.
Yeah, well.
And you haven't seen Suspiria.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Deadly Friend stars Matthew
Laberteau,
or something.
Sounds like a fine French cheese.
And he stars as this dude, and he's with Christy Swanson, and she dies. And
poor Christy Swanson.
She dies, right?
Yeah, and then she comes back and hunts vampires.
What?
Never mind. No. It was a Buffy reference.
Anyway, something happens to Christy Swanson.
She dies.
She dies, and so
her abusive father knocks her down the stairs, and she dies.
Right. Oh yeah, she falls down the stairs.
Yeah.
So then Matt Lab,
represent,
brings her back by using Android technology, and brings back his girlfriend as his deadly friend.
Oh, I saw what you did there.
And and
proceeds to have a terrible movie.
And if I had Christy Swanson at the time and I knew robot stuff, I'd probably bring her back too.
Yeah, but she comes back as like, you know, like not the same. She's
the movie still has heart though.
She's handicapped.
She's not handicapped.
She's robot handicapped.
What do you mean she's handicapped?
Because she just runs around like, but she just goes around. Oh, he transplants the brain of his little computer he's made into Christy Swanson.
Yeah.
Called BB.
Right.
So all Christy Swanson does for the whole movie is go around going, BB, BB.
Yeah, but she looks good doing it.
She's all sallow and like bags under her eyes.
I like gaunt chicks.
Oh, Jesus, obviously.
She can throw a basketball pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, that I admit that's my favorite scene when the Where's the Beef lady gets the basketball.
Ann Ramsey.
But
she's not the Where's the Beef lady.
No,
she's
not the
Mama. Throw Mama from the Train lady.
She's also was the Where's the Beef lady, wasn't
she?
I think she was, man.
I don't know.
If you don't know what the Where's the Beef lady is, go to YouTube and type in Wendy's Where's the Beef, and you'll see what we're talking about.
I don't
think
it was Anne Ramsey.
I think it was, but...
Anyway, we've gone way off topic here with Deadly Friend, because Chris doesn't like it. Anyway, I thought it was pretty good, and it is definitely a mixed reaction to this movie.
I just remember, like, they threw in those dream sequences... Like her,
right, yeah.
Her stabbing her abusive dad in the throat with a vase and the blood spraying out the end, like it's coming out of a pipe, just to appease the Nightmare on Elm Street people, because that's what Wes Craven was known for at the time. And I think that was a bad decision. And I don't, unlike you, I don't feel like the movie had enough heart in it, because I feel like if he was any sort of a non-nerd who actually cared about Christy Swanson, he wouldn't have brought her back as a fucking handicapped robot.
But he didn't know she was just going to say BB. He thought he was going to have his girlfriend back.
She wasn't his girlfriend, really. She was just some chick that he had the hots for.
Was she?
Kind of, if I remember.
Anyway, I remember liking this movie.
Yeah, so. I like People Under the Stairs better, and you know what?
She's a killer robot. Just leave me alone. Okay, what do you got, buddy?
No, see, that's probably the harshest disagreement we've had for a little while here.
Well, we'll leave it for the Wes Craven episode.
Well, what I've got is something that I'm just going to mention because I love it, and you love it too. You love it.
Don't look at me like that.
It'll cost you an arm and a leg.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been saving that for you. I was going to bring it up, and then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be a nice guy and let Chris bring
Give me the
on.
Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
The Jim Wynorski 1986 B-movie classic Chopping Mall about people getting trapped in a mall with what?
Killbots.
So this is a movie that was shot really quickly by Jim Wynorski for Roger Corman. It got together a pretty stellar cast of girls. Kelly Maroney from Night of the Comet. And who?
Barbara Crampton.
Barbara Crampton from Reanimator and From Beyond. And?
Girl or good boy?
Fraternity Vacation.
Who, Crampton?
Crampton.
Yeah.
So, it's...
And Body Double.
Oh, yeah.
A very memorable scene.
You know,
Body
Barbara
Double.
Crampton.
What?
Barbara Crampton was so good.
Yeah, she was.
So hot.
Yeah.
And she's hot in Chopping Mall, too.
She is.
But Chopping Mall is really about security robots at a mall killing people who are in there after hours. And there's some pretty cool, funny dialogue in it that Wynorski kind of was known for at that time.
Yeah.
There's a little slither of nudity in there to keep us happy. And the robots are pretty badass. They shoot lasers. There's a really cool explosion of a head in there that is the best scene by far in this movie. It's only 76 minutes.
Yeah, it clips along good.
You can't get bored of this movie.
It's a Wynorski special.
A Wynorski special. And he had a lot of specials in the 80s, but I think Chopping Mall is my favorite Wynorski movie.
It's a pretty great movie.
I mean, he's been teasing on Facebook that it's coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And if this happens, I will be the happiest boy.
I bought the DVD. I'm sure you did as well.
The DVD's full frame, but it's got a really cool commentary on it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but I think Wynorski's... I would love to talk about Wynorski more at length one day, but I think Chopping Mall goes up there with Deathstalker 2. It's just one of those really fun movies that he made where he had no pretensions going in and just wanted to deliver this quickly shot, you know, killer robot movie.
Yeah.
And he delivered.
He did. And John Terlesky, who played Deathstalker 2, was also in Chopping Mall.
Oh, yeah.
Playing a little bit more of a dick in this one. He was like the kind of jock dickhead guy, but it's pretty cool to see him in there as well.
It's all good because Barbara Crampton was in it.
It was, yeah. And it was shot at the Sherman Oaks Galleria, which is
sadly no longer with us.
Yeah, which is where Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Valley Girl were shot.
Didn't they also shoot the scene in Commando there?
Yeah.
Where he swings down on the little streamer
that
and lands on top of the
mall should have been a freaking historical landmark,
I know,
I'm telling you.
So many movies. So many movies.
Yeah. All right, cool. So the next one I'm going to bring up is Class of 1999. Directed by Mark Lester, and this is about I don't know if it's really a sequel to Class of 84.
They called
it
a sequel because of its title and the director.
Yeah, it's a very loose sequel, but it's basically about a high school where android robots, evil android robots, are teachers. And
I always thought my teachers might be evil android robots.
And some of the, and the students have to like fight them. But the cool thing about this is, you know, the teachers are played by Malcolm McDowell and Pam Grier.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a pretty good flick. Tracy Lind is also in it. She was in My Boyfriend's Back in Fright Night 2. But it's Mark Lester. So it's cheesy and fun. And, I don't know. I don't have a lot to say about this one.
I remember
one, but
they,
I
made
wanna...
they made a sequel too.
Yeah, The Substitute.
Which was, it was, I can't remember who the main guy in it was, but I actually kind of liked the sequel too. I think it was Sasha Graham was the main actor in it. And it was more of an action movie, I think, than the first one.
Okay.
But that
Sasha
was
Graham,
too.
Like the guy from Dazed and Confused?
I think it was Sasha Graham. I'm probably wrong.
Okay.
I'm probably wrong.
Anyway, it was a cool movie. I just wanted to bring it up because it's Mark Lester and because it's kind of a different spin on the android thing with teachers being the androids.
I think we already talked about Mark Lester enough when I mentioned Commando.
Yeah, we can never talk about Mark Lester.
Yeah, that's true. Mark Lester's pretty cool.
Okay.
Let's just do some quick rundowns here so we can just, you know, I think we're getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the ones that are important.
We're doing okay on timeline. I mean, the only other one I wanted to bring up just a little bit, and you've probably never seen this one, but it's just what I remember from my childhood that is different from all these killer robots. Like, if I'm going to try and go into a little bit more of a happy place, it's called Heart Beeps.
I've seen this.
With Andy Kaufman and Bernadette Peters.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I did see it.
Directed by Alan Arkus, who did Rock and Roll High School.
It's very famous for being like one of the worst movies made in the 80s, I think.
It is, but it's kind of fun, and it's got these robots. And I really dug the makeup in it. Like, they make up Kaufman and Peters like robots, and they're... I can't remember the real premise of it. I think there's... They've come down to Earth, and there's this, like, sort of bounty hunter robot coming to try and get them back or something. But it was just kind of neat, and it's just the makeups on those two is pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember it's kind of – did you say it was kind of like a Wizard of Oz tale?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. Of course, I haven't seen it since it was on the movie channel back in the day.
It was
but
interesting.
It's a very – it's definitely a snapshot of the early 80s.
But didn't you think they look kind of cool, though? Like, they did look kind of neat.
Well, they made Bernadette Peters kind of look like a French maid in a way. Mm-hmm. And then Andy Kaufman just had that gray tuxedo. He had a tuxedo, but his face was all, like, metallic. And,
yeah.
You know, and there's all these weird kind of robots on the side and – I mean, it's an interesting movie. I don't think it... Has it ever come out on DVD?
I don't think it has.
I mean, it'd be a kind of movie... It's a very curious, obscure, like... It would just be something interesting to see, just considering that it was such a bomb.
Well, I think it would be interesting revisiting, because knowing now who Alan Arkus is, mm-hmm, as a director... I mean, he's directed some movies I really dig. I mean, Hollywood Boulevard's one of my favorites, and yeah, he did it. Maybe I just didn't get it at the time.
Could be.
Know?
And I mean, and it's Andy Kaufman. It's probably one of the movies that he's, no one knows he did.
Yeah.
So that would be, that's interesting for his fans to go and look at too, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Heart Beeps. But if you want to talk robot comedies, let's talk about Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Whoa, why?
Because don't you remember in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the whole point is that they want them, they go to hell and they're replaced on Earth by what? Evil robot clones.
Yeah. Totally.
So my favorite scene is when they're replaced by the evil robot clones and they get thrown off of the mountain, which is kind of like, it's that mountain that's always shown in the Star Trek movies and everything,
right,
out in the California desert. And the one robot spits on the dead one, like the real Bill and Ted, before they go to hell. And he's like, dude, I totally loogied on the good dead me. And I just, Bogus Journey doesn't get the kind of appreciation I think it deserves, because I love Excellent Adventure, but Bogus Journey is just so bizarre when they go to hell and they play like Twister versus the Grim Reaper.
Bill Sadler.
And, yeah, Will Sadler plays the Grim Reaper and they play Twister and all these games against him, and there's like
so
all these dream sequences of this like killer Energizer bunny like thing jumping towards him and all
that.
It's
a weird flick, and, eh?
Yeah, it's totally weird.
Like, and riffing on the Seventh Seal and
yeah,
shit.
And yeah, and I saw that movie by myself in the theaters because none of my friends wanted to go see it.
Wow.
With me. And I just remember those robots, they were kind of cool just because they were like, you know, it's like Bill and Ted but in robotic form, so they're trying to do the air guitar and everything and not doing it right and all this. And then there was a good robot called Station who saves, mm-hmm, Bill and Ted at the end, and I just wanted to bring it up just because I think it's funny that they had these robots in a Bill and Ted movie.
Sure, that's funny. So I've got a bunch here that I haven't seen that I could bring up. Did you want me to just run through them, and if you have anything to say, you can say it. I just haven't seen these ones, but I do know they're kind of, they've got notable killer robots in them.
So we'll just say that this is kind of a hit list of killer robot or robot movies if you want to check them out. So sure. Let's go through this.
Okay, so first one I got is Eve of Destruction.
Yeah, which is Gregory Hines, and it's kind of a Terminator, or Lady Terminator one, where he has to hunt down a killer female robot.
Yep.
It was put out by Shout Scream Factory on Blu-ray. Yep,
they put it out recently.
I've seen it when it was out on VHS, and I remember it was kind of a fun little action flick. I did buy the Blu-ray because I had to.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know how it is when I revisit it.
Yeah, the girl's some chick from the Netherlands. She hasn't really done anything else. Okay, the next one I've got is The Vindicator from 1986.
Awesome.
With Pam Grier.
Awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's like Jean, I think it's
Jean-Claude Lord.
Jean-Claude Lord directed it. He did Visiting Hours in 1982, which is like the hospital slasher movie where Michael Ironside is fucking awesome as the psycho killer. And Vindicator's awesome because it's like kind of like an 80s culty movie where it's like a scientist transported into the body of an android and fighting crime. Kind of RoboCop before RoboCop, only way more culty and drive-in-ish.
Nice. And yeah, I mean, it looked pretty cool.
It's got Pam Grier. What more do you need?
Exactly. All right, the next one I got is called Evolver from 1995. Yeah,
that's directed by Mark Rosman, who did House on Sorority Row back in the 80s. I remember it was kind of a fun movie. It was like about a video game nerd kid who gets the chance to play the real game against this robot, but the robot's kind of like, you know, malfunctions and goes evil. And the main thing I remember about Evolver is just that it was kind of like the robot in it looked kind of like the ones in Chopping Mall.
Yeah, that's what it looked like to me, too.
Yeah, like that's the main thing I remembered. But yeah, that was a pretty fun movie, but I haven't seen it in a while.
It looked pretty fun. It's got Ethan Embry from like Can't Hardly Wait and stuff, and Cassidy Ray, who I thought was really hot back in the day. She was in Models, Inc.
Yep. Models, Inc.
Okay, so the next one I got is was actually recently released by Olive Films. They just put it out last month, so November 2014. It's called Moontrap with Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, I remember seeing that back in the day, too, with Walter Koenig from Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it's them on the moon fighting a robot. I remember it being kind of mediocre.
Have you seen it?
I saw it on VHS.
Yeah, I've heard that it's kind of mediocre, too. The trailer looked pretty cool, but I haven't seen
it. I remember seeing it on VHS, and I mean, that was back when I'd watch anything Bruce Campbell was in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I might have to watch that again, too.
Yeah, it's interesting that Olive chose that one. I never thought it was a greatly respected movie, but...
Well, that's like Twilight Time doing that other Bruce Campbell movie, Mind Warp.
Yeah,
like,
weird.
That's weird coming out on Blu-ray as well.
Totally. Okay, so the next one I got is Demon Seed from 1977 with Julie Christie. Yep,
based on a Dean Koontz novel.
Yep.
And that one was kind of bizarre because it was a robot rape movie.
Yeah, it looked really weird.
And I kind of like it.
When I watched the trailer, I was like, wow, this looks like it's some weird 80s movie. And how the hell did Julie Christie go from Dr. Zhivago to this?
Well, it's 77.
Yeah, and she actually made it between Shampoo and Heaven Can Wait. Yeah, so she was kind of peaking in her career when she made this.
I kind of like that movie, but it's kind of creepy in the same time.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting one. And the director wasn't pleased with it. If I remember correctly.
Donald Camel.
And I think that was the last movie he made. I'm not sure on this, but he did end up committing suicide while editing that he had made, if I've got the story correct.
Wow.
And I'm not sure if it was after Demon Seed or if he'd done anything else after, but it's a pretty morbid little twist to that.
Yikes.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want me to keep going?
Keep going.
Okay. So the next one I got is Death Machine.
Yep.
From 1984, directed by Stephen Norrington.
Yep.
And he actually did the robot effects in Hardware, and then he went on to direct Blade.
That's the movie.
And this is with sweaty Brad Dourif.
We were talking earlier about Death Machine, because I did bring it up to you when we were having dinner earlier tonight.
Right.
And I said, Stephen Norrington did something, but I couldn't remember what.
Right.
It was Blade.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Stephen Norrington.
So I haven't seen this one. It looked okay to me. Didn't look. Yeah.
I only scene I remember from that movie is there's a scene where a cop's eating a donut and the Death Machine like jumps from a high building on top of him and kills him.
Yeah. That's all. The monster looked kind of cool.
Yeah, that's all I remember.
Okay. And then I got Crash and Burn.
Yep. Charlie Band.
From 1986, starring Megan Ward, Bill Moseley, and Jack McGee.
Crash and Burn was okay. It was post-apocalyptic. The robot effects were by David Allen, who did the stop motion on Puppet Master and things like that. And he also got Oscar nominated for, I think it was Young Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, God, I remember that one.
I think, but it was another one of those. At that time, Charles Band was doing a whole bunch of robot movies because he did Robot Jocks, which was directed by Stuart Gordon from Reanimator fame. From and he kind of, that was kind of like Rock'em Sock'em Robots brought to life, because it was warring countries who would battle out their differences in big giant robots.
Yeah.
And then there was like that kind of not quite sequel, Robot Wars, which Charlie Band did too, which was directed by his dad, Richard. And I remember absolutely nothing about that one. But I just remember that Crash and Burn had a pretty cool scene with the robot fighting this guy who had half his face burned off.
I don't think the robot was in Crash and Burn too much. I think
not
it was
really.
Like
it was mostly
something.
At the end, yeah.
Then the only other one, the one I've got recently is the only other one I've got on this list is Virus from 1999 with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
But it looked kind of cool, but I haven't seen it.
It's better left
went under the radar.
Better left forgotten.
Yeah.
It's sad that I've seen every single movie you just mentioned.
Yeah, it is. Well, at least we got it in.
I've seen too much.
Did you have any more to mention?
I don't have anything else written down. You kind of hit it when you... The last things I had written down that I hadn't mentioned yet were Robot Jocks and Evolver, actually.
Oh, cool.
So they both came up. But I don't know. I find robots are a fascinating subject.
They are.
Just because we are getting closer into technology to what we've seen in these movies back. And, you know, it's becoming a reality. And I'm kind of scared of this taking over and sentient beings and all this stuff. I mean, this could become a reality. And I don't want machines to enslave me.
I don't either, buddy.
I'm scared. But anyway, what would we say the top three robot movies are?
I'm just going to bring up a few more obvious. These are kind of iconic robots. These are kind of iconic robots that we didn't talk about.
Cylons.
I'm just going to talk about them quickly. Yeah. Okay, so
Cylons.
Cylons from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Gort from The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yep.
Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet.
Yep.
Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
Optimus Prime and Megatron from Transformers.
If we're talking about the 80s Transformers cartoon movie, we're okay. But if we're talking about Michael Bay, that can suck a dick.
I'm going to bring up Targ from Interstellar because I think he might get in there eventually.
Okay.
Box from Logan's Run.
Okay.
And of course, Data from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yep.
And last but not least, certainly not least.
Not least.
R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, not least. Not least.
But that's all I got. I think that's my exhaustive list. I think we've covered pretty much everything we can cover.
Well, hopefully we didn't bore you too much with our androids.
Yeah, we didn't go too far over time either.
And hopefully you can find yourself some cool snuggle up with your loved ones and let's watch some killer robots tonight, honey. Because nothing better than seeing someone's head crushed. Nothing better in this world.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. And as always, please check out our Twitter at GBW Podcast. And you can also check us out online at thevideograveyard.com/GBW Podcast.
Or Facebook.com/GBW Podcast.
Yeah.
And be sure to subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating there because, you know, we like to know what's going on. We like to know that you like what you're listening to. Feel free to give us some suggestions, some feedback, whatever you want. We're not above listening to you and taking your suggestions to heart.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah. See you later.
Bye.
See you in the future.
Bye-bye.